I couldn't even perm my hair anymore because the chemicals brought on all sorts of ill effects. As you open up spiritually, I believe you become more sensitive and receptive to higher vibrations and energies. You become ultra sensitive. Your psychic senses, sight, and hearing seem more sensitive. However, you also become more sensitive to lower vibrational and toxic substances, to chemical toxins and pollutants and negative energies. As you are transmuting, changing and finding that certain things in your environment become bothersome, the Arcturians can offer invaluable help. By that October, I had reached a crisis point. My eyes burned, itched, ached, and carried a red yellowish tint most of the time. The skin beneath my eyes became very dry, red, and wrinkled. When I was not in the school building and when I was away from the farmlands around my home, my condition would clear up almost completely. I tried the conventional route, I was tested for allergies, and tried three different allergy medications. Every test was negative and nothing worked. By springtime, I had requested some healing help from the Arcturians. I soon began to improve, and I realized that their healing work was being done during my sleep time. This was later confirmed during a group meditation. I credit a female Arcturian healer for assisting me in curing my eye problem that stemmed from the toxic substances in my environment. These days, I believe that I just have to follow my 118 celestial healing own internal feelings and intuitions. And I believe that I always get imprinted with the right information if I choose to listen to it. I am doing as much healing in altered states, in dream states, and in meditations as I would ever do in a conscious, waking state. And this work is much more long-lasting, effective, and powerful. At times, I feel that these higher dimensional states are more real than our conscious, waking reality. Healing has a lot to do with what we are willing to believe. If you know that something is not going to affect you anymore, if you are not going to make it a part of your reality, then illness has no reason to persist. The body is pretty amazing. It will respond and heal, according to the beliefs you allow for in your reality. In fact, one of my friends even has a pet who was healed in this way, with extraterrestrial assistance. Her cat wasn't doing well. She was disoriented, she was limping, she would not eat. My friend got a strong message from an Arcturian: if you would visualize sending your cat up through the corridor to our ship, we'll go ahead and work on the cat from here. So my friend did this visualization, and by 4 a.m., the cat was jumping all over her bed, acting as if nothing had ever been wrong. My husband and I have long desired to serve as emissaries for the extraterrestrials who are here on Earth helping humans. I consider my relationship with the ETs to be deep, sacred, and always accepting. They are truly some of the most important members of my spiritual family, and I am keenly aware of and very comfortable with my origin in the stars. My spiritual code of ethics includes living simple spiritual principles. The Arcturians are one example of those ET groups that emphasize simple spiritual principles in order to assist in personal and planetary transformations. I believe that everyone on the planet is, in their own way, trying to transmute and to change. It is a much slower and more difficult process, however, for people who do not realize their own healing powers. But I believe that many different extraterrestrial groups are working with us to facilitate our natural healing processes and help us regain our personal power as spiritual human beings. When we returned to Arizona in October of 1997, this time to live there permanently and set up our publishing company, I was apprehensive because of my previous sinus experiences. Fortunately, I have experienced only minor sinus-related problems and very little negative reaction to anything in my new Arizona environment. I am truly grateful to the Arcturians for all they have done for me personally. They are a loving, selfless group of extraterrestrials who only wish to see us evolve, raise our vibrations, and ascend spiritually. I look forward to the day when I encounter them with full visual presence. Chapter 8, J. Dean Fagerstrom, on Angels and Extraterrestrials. At age 66, J. Dean Fagerstrom has explored numerous career paths and avenues of study, including music, mathematics, theology, poetry, and photography. After 11 years in the U.S. Army, including time spent in Germany where he met his wife Helga, Dean left the service to work as a writer in New York. Since he had been in the intelligence field while serving his country, he eventually established a sideline career in corporate security. He recently retired, and now devotes all of his time to writing a numerical science provided to him by the spiritual society he refers to as Anglian. A widower, Dean lives in Putnam Lake, New York, and has three grown children. He has enjoyed a lifetime rich with angelic, extraterrestrial contact. I was quite pleased that he was willing to share his encounter experiences with me, and to come to my home during a visit to his son who, at the time, was living in South Florida. Over strong coffee on my sun-washed patio, Dean, a gentle, ethereal-looking man, talked of his love for his family, his writing, and his celestial guide, Maxine. All started for me at a very, very young age. On 15th of December, 1924, a child was born into our family. She lived for less than 15 minutes due to a respiratory ailment. She had been named Maxine. At this time, my parents lived in Oregon. They were nominally called Christians, but were still searching for a greater kind of spirituality. Eventually, my mother would become an ordained minister and establish her own ministry in Tennessee, but the loss of Maxine caused my parents to become estranged, and although they did not separate, there was not any closeness for almost 8 years. Then, I was conceived. My mother told me the following story: when you were born, your father and I were so happy that we reconciled. I always told everyone that you were my child of reconciliation. When you were about 3 weeks old, I bundled you up in a blanket and walked to the local church. There was no one there but ourselves. I walked you down to the front of the little church and placed you on the low table before the altar. And I prayed this prayer: O Lord of heaven, you have taken one child from us, and now am I give you back the one that you gave me after 8 long years. He is yours from this day forward. Do with him what you will. I happen to firmly believe that Maxine was assigned to me on that day. When a mother prays like that over a child, and virtually says to God, "My child is yours, he is no longer mine," I think the 122 spiritual realm responds in a very decided way. I don't have any other explanation for the fact that, by the age of 5, I was beginning to see things that existed in another dimension. I had all kinds of otherworldly experiences in my young years, experiences that have continued to this day. Whatever my destiny in life was to be, it came in random bursts. But it always reverted back to that commitment my mother had made. There was always the feeling that you represent something, Dean. Now, fulfill it. Maxine is an emissary. She has access to the two spiritual societies that I communicate with, Anglian and Afax. She has always told me this: you have to think differently. You have to be able to communicate with me on my terms, the terms that come from the divine source. My conjunctions. Maxine uses the term conjunction. She does not use the term relationship R with those whom Maxine sends to me. In March of 1953, I was in a terrible state of clinical depression while at a theological seminary in Missouri. I left there after what I have described as an encounter, which resulted in a very dramatic enlightenment. My brother was the public relations director at the seminary, and had coerced me into becoming a seminarian. This was not what my heart wanted to do. I was disgusted and frustrated with what I felt was a bigoted, dogmatic atmosphere. I knew that there had to be something different. 123 UBC began to fast, pray, and meditate. I cut myself off from everything and everyone. Finally, I prayed this prayer: Dear God in heaven, you must do something in my behalf. I cannot take this any longer. You have got to intervene. At 2 o'clock on the morning of the 15th of March, I went to the music theory classroom. In high school, I had received university scholarships in music and had wanted to become a choir director. As I sat in the seminary music room, I opened my copy of the Bible. The book happened to open to John, and I looked down casually at these words, "I am the resurrection and the life." All of a sudden, the words on the page turned completely red. They lifted off the page and moved around, so that I was reading them as if on a page held in front of me. And then I heard a voice, the voice that had originally uttered these very words. I fell forward onto my face, onto the floor. And I passed completely out of my body and into this other world. From that moment on, my life was completely transformed. Every single molecular particle in my system changed. All of my atoms underwent a total change. All of my particles completely realigned. This was not a religious experience. It was a spiritual and a celestial experience. When I walked out of that music room at daybreak, I was filled with an ecstatic sense of well-being, of knowledge and understanding, of total peace. I gathered up my belongings and I fled the realm of institutionalized religion forever. Now, this is not an historical anecdote. It is a present reality. It had nothing to do with time, nothing to do with space. So I don't look at this encounter as history. I look at the experience as being the exact same reality from which I speak at this point. I have had so-called extraterrestrial contact. But I really don't spend a lot of time on extraterrestrial or terrestrial matters. I'm much more interested in communicating with the kingdom of God. This is where all reality has its origin. The earth is just an effect of a divine creation. The so-called extraterrestrials were made by the divine creator, too, just like any terrestrial. Over the years, I have had contact with an extraterrestrial being called Donastra, from a planet tentatively called Solarian. I don't want to be dogmatic about this. Through Donastra, I was given a picture of what it was like to live as an extraterrestrial being, but he was not located in the time and space at the particular moment when he was speaking to me. And I understood that. He had lived during an earlier time, and had progressed to the spiritual world. In 1962, I was stationed in Germany. My wife and I had been fortunate enough to secure a lovely apartment 6 or 7 minutes away from the base. On the 19th of July, at 3 a.m., I was working with numerical complexes on a pad of graph paper at an easel. Suddenly, the paper became like a TV screen and I could see on it this gentleman. He was dressed in a blue bodysuit with a cape. He had a belt with an insignia, and a necklace with a medallion on it. He just smiled and spoke to me. He told me his name, Donastra. He told me that there were many other civilizations throughout the universe that had progressed on a spiritual plane such that their science was not contaminated with the faulty principles and concepts that we are accustomed to. These other civilizations were therefore able to go about visiting other planetary civilizations. Donastra was, at that time, with the spiritual world. And he began, over time, to acquaint me with what he represented. Later, I wrote the Book of Anglian, and then a second volume, the Book of Effects. It was one of Donastra's contemporaries, I believe, who gave me the drawings. At 2 o'clock on the morning of the 20th of January, 1968, I woke up from a sound sleep. Looking up at one corner of the bedroom ceiling, I saw what resembled an old-fashioned microphone. Protruding from the center of this instrument was a kind of needle or feeler. The instrument approached me, coming closer and closer. I realized I was in a state in which I could not move, I was fixated. The instrument put the feeler right in the center of my forehead above my eyes. It did not penetrate but stopped there, and I felt, and heard, a high frequency. This intense vibration passed clear through me. I continued to lie there until the instrument receded and disappeared. At around 6 a.m. I got up and made coffee. Then I sat at the dining room table. At around 8:30-126, or so, I felt someone with me. They said, "Get in your car and go down to the stationery store. We'll show you what to buy." And I did. I bought some graph pads, certain kind of pens, some triangles, and other drafting instruments. Then I went home, and I began to draw. I drew under the influence of someone. Dash, it was like I was programmed. I completed 32 pages of diagrams over a 3-day period. I was instructed to name each diagram, but I do not claim to understand the meanings and functions of all of these instruments. I do not even know their purpose. In 1981, Phil Imbrogno came to see me. I was instructed by Donostra to give him all of the drawings. I said to Phil, I was just instructed to give you these. I don't know why. Footnote. Philip J. Imbrogno, a science educator and astronomer, writes about Dean's drawings in his book, Contact of the Fifth Kind. See references, page 317. The diagrams are a marvel to behold. They are in vivid color, drawn with extreme precision. They have been examined by professional people from many different fields. A professional draftsman said that a person would need at least 20 years of experience in drawing technical diagrams to produce them. He also said that a top-notch professional would need at least 6 hours to complete each diagram. Many of the diagrams show devices that were unknown in 1968, but are being experimented with today. Scientists at Princeton, Northwestern, and M.LT have also looked at the diagrams and agreed that they are accurate in design, although there is not enough information to tell you exactly what each device is, how it works, or how to build it. One design was of a three-dimensional viewing screen, some showed a variety of optical test equipment, and one device, a helical coil, was actually constructed. According to Imbrogno, it produced an electromagnetic flux much greater than can be produced by any similar coils available today, before it burned out. End footnote. In January of 1988, I was called by a friend and invited to a party where I was expected to play a new Korg electric piano. I had agreed to the invitation, but did not know how to play the piano. I'd always had a great love for the piano, but had never learned how to play it. At the party, I requested that the piano be turned around to face the gathering. I turned it on, and started playing. I did not understand what was happening. The music was somewhat crude, yet quite beautiful. On the way home, Maxine made her presence known. She said, "You are going to buy a piano exactly like that one." I said, "What? I don't have that kind of money." Maxine said, "It will be provided for you." Within 10 days, there was a brand new Korg electric piano in my house. I sat down and simply started playing. Under the influence of someone else. Later, using an internal recorder, I recorded many, many tapes. And every professional who has ever listened to my tapes says, "This is Franz Liszt." Undoubtedly. And I think it is Franz Liszt all right. I never did practice, and I was playing music of a complexity that would be impossible for anyone who had not been taught piano. Yet, I had never taken lessons. The music comes in a spontaneous influx, as I let someone take over. But I am not in a trance. I watch my fingers flying up and down the keyboard. The scientific explanation would create a new science. One night in the fall of 1973, I woke up at 3 a.m. to see two little beings in hoods entering the bedroom. They were very diminutive, less than 5 feet in height, dressed all in black. They just marched through the closed door, then walked up to and through the large German bed my wife and I occupied. A separation occurred so that it seemed as though I were suddenly above my body, hovering over it. From this vantage point, I observed the surgical operation the two beings conducted. The one on my right side opened up a stiff black packet that resembled the fold-up packages one uses to store silverware. The lining inside was a red velvet, and there were straps to hold each surgical instrument in place. He removed something that resembled tweezers, while the other being, the one to my left, held an illuminated object shaped like a boomerang. Giving the boomerang a kind of flourish over my head, the one on my left actually laid back my skull from cerebrum to cerebellum. The other then took out a vial from the surgical pack, poured out what appeared to be sapphires and rubies, and, used the tweezers to implant these gems in certain locations in my brain. When they were done, one folded back into place, the flap of my skull. The other used the boomerang instrument to heal it up. Then they walked back to the bedroom door, turned to one another, and bowed respectfully. As if to say, mission accomplished. I was never afraid. I knew it was all part of the program. These individuals were not terrestrial beings. When these individuals came, I knew that they were representing something spiritual. For several days afterward, there was a strange sensation around the top of my head, as if I had been wearing a tight sweatband. And I began to see blue pinpricks of light. When I read, or stared at something, I'd see these blue globes, lights that moved like comets, then hovered. It continues to this day. This experience sounds so bizarre. But it was not a physical operation. It was done on a spiritual plane. It represents a kind of cleansing, so that when messages are transferred from the spiritual world, they are no longer distorted by my brain. I've had my brain cleansed for most of my life. They've cleaned up my brain, so that it can function as an organic adjunct to the mind. The brain is just a series of references, like the Library of Congress. It is the mind, however, that is free. I've been involved in every field that you can imagine. But none of it is meaningful in itself. What is meaningful is that I have attempted to open myself up to every propensity that God gave me. So that I can 130, express all of it, for His sake, and for the sake of men and women everywhere. There is only one purpose in life, and that is to instigate love in the hearts of men and women. Everything in my life reverts back to this. I've never known an illness, I've never had an organic illness affect me in my whole life. I only had one childhood disease, chicken pox. Other than that, there hasn't been a single bad day. I don't have bad days. I have no complaints. I must admit, however, I am a smoker. Now, this is not a promotion for cigarettes. But there are individuals who die of lung cancer who never smoked a cigarette in their life. The point is, there is only one cause of cancer. To flatly say that cigarettes cause cancer is nothing but an outright fallacy. Years ago, under the influence of Donestra, I was taken on a visionary experience. I was flying over some islands where there was no foliage to be seen. These islands were totally barren. They resembled a highly enlarged picture of human cells. And they looked like oysters, out of the shell, in their mucus-like broth. I asked my hosts, "What does this mean?" They said, "This is how carcinoma of every kind has its beginning." Then they explained it to me, but purely as an organic situation. Since the human being has three aspects, body, mind, and soul, the cancer is conjoined to these other two aspects. So the following cannot be taken as a remedy for the disease itself. What they showed me during that visionary experience was, this, when protein is not properly rendered for its purpose and is not flushed out of the body, it can reside in the system and become crystalline. It then has the ability to send or receive a signal. When these residuals are in the body cells in their crystalline form, the cells can send and receive the wrong signals. This results in chaos, and the breakdown of the cell. Once the tissue breaks down, the underscore cancer results. The incidentals regarding the protein were not made clear to me at that time. But I think that, with some reasonable research, the particulars could be determined. This information does not mean that anyone who overindulges in meat will experience such a buildup of protein residue and contract cancer. The incidence of cancer is integral to one's state of mind. Emotional perturbation, impacted feelings, and changes on the soul level can cause a reaction in the organic system so that the cell's signals become chaotic. I think that this information was given to me to provide me with a greater understanding of the human being. Cancer is one part of the larger picture, body, mind, and soul. The body itself is only an effect. It is the mind and soul that are actually in control, because the body is only an outgrowth of who we really are. When there is a serenity, a peacefulness, underscore a oneness, then there is no room for an intrusion such as illness or disease. This is the information as it was explained to me by Maxine. Trying to condense a lifetime of spiritual experience is very difficult. But it all reverts back to Maxine. Those who have no appreciable time on Earth often will choose to have vicarious experience through others living on this planet. I am Maxine's surrogate. She can see down through my eyes and thereby understand what a human being experiences. And she allows me to express my soul. I believe that my conjunction with Maxine is a state of evolutionary progress. It is a mutual effort, part of a course to render spiritual truth through the material. God does not preempt our understanding, but allows us to understand what we are willing to understand. From my experiences with both the spiritual realm and extraterrestrial civilizations, I know that there exists a rational basis for everything in life. Part 2. We make it happen. Chapter 9. Bev Marcott, remote viewer and healer. Bev Marcott was born and raised in Connecticut. For many years, she worked as a graphic artist and graphic designer. In 1996, at the age of 54, she changed careers. Bev attended the Farsight Institute in Atlanta for training as a remote viewer. Currently, she works as a professional viewer of forensic targets for Transdimensional Systems in Atlanta. She is also the CEO, founder and coordinator of Lightkeepers Remote Viewing, Remote Healing Network, a national group of psychics trained to do healing work at a distance. Bev currently lives in Ohio with her husband, an engineer in fluid aerodynamics. They have 6 grown children. Before talking to Bev about her experiences as a healer and someone who has also received celestial healing, I was only slightly familiar with the paranormal technique she practices. Remote viewing, or scientific remote viewing SRV, is similar to meditation and psychic skills in that the practitioner accesses a part of the mind that is typically not used during normal waking consciousness, making this highly intuitive function dominant in their awareness. The difference between meditators, psychics, and remote viewers is that SAF practitioners are trained through highly structured programs. They learn how to utilize the paraconscious mind and to record the results in a specific, scientifically reproducible manner. Based on ancient practices of various indigenous peoples and their shamans or spiritual healers, remote viewing was developed into a scientific protocol by the U.S. military for the purpose of the collection of intelligence information. Government-trained SRV officers planned, conducted, and reported on long-distance intelligence missions accomplished completely in their own minds. The government program was apparently successful enough that the SRV training for psychic spies established sometime in the 1970s existed for several decades and may still be in operation as a protected, top secret, program. Bev is one of the growing number of privately trained remote viewers who utilize their special skills both for communicating with extraterrestrial, extradimensional beings and for conducting healing sessions at a distance. How she became such an extraordinary sort of healer is a fascinating story. Throughout Part Heal, you will read some remarkable case reports of healers who, like Bev, utilize celestial energies in order to help others achieve an improved state of physical and emotional health and spiritual well-being. The oldest of 5 children, I was always considered the oddball in the family. I saw and felt things differently, and was called eccentric and strange by my parents. At age 11, my eyes began to change color from brown to hazel, then to 138, green, the color they are today. At about this same time, I began to experience premonitions. I would tell my mother in advance of unannounced company that would be arriving, and one time I informed her of the death of a distant relative, confirmed later in the day by my uncle. Shortly after my 21st birthday, I got married. At age 27, I had a near-death experience when I was hospitalized for surgery to remove an ovarian cyst. During the operation, which did not go well, I woke up and watched the procedure from above my body. And during the recovery period, I began to experience brief episodes where I again found myself out of body, sometimes feeling as if I had access to all of the answers for all of life's questions. After this, my psychic ability expanded markedly. I began to experience spontaneous astral projection, my conscious mind leaving my body to travel to distant places and gather information.